Hello and welcome to Compulsive Reader Talks. I'm Magdalena Ball and today's guest, Robbie Coburn, has had poems published in Poetry, Mianjin, Island, Westerly, along with a very wide range of anthologies, and is the author of chapbooks Before Bone and Viscera, Scar to Scar, written with Michelle Seminara, and full-length books The Other Flesh by UWA Publishing, and I Could Not Have Hurt You by Kitty Bunk, and Ghost Poetry, just published by Upswell, which we're going to talk about today. So Robbie, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's just a delight to have you on the show. I've been wanting to chat with you for such a long time. So can I ask you to open the show with the title poem for the collection?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is actually the first poem in the book as well.
Yeah. Ghost poetry. I will be the ghost who dreams of you until our eyes collide. There is no map in my flesh, no doorways or windows, no spurred heart or bruised throat when we touch. The house where we lived is still standing. Everyone we know is there. I bite into my tongue and say sorry because you've already told them everything. There is nothing you will remember about my new bedroom as you redress yourself in my bones. We sit down on the bed and speak, but you cannot hear me, and I cannot hear you. I want to tell you what happened to me after, what the blood and glass was meant for. Sometimes the night makes you look like a stranger.
Thank you. I feel like I need a very long pause after that one. So let's,
thank you.
It's just, it's so powerful. It's a little bit unusual to open a book with a title poem, but just talk to me about that poem and why you opened the book with it, and then maybe about ghosts as well, because there's a few that haunt the pages.
I think that it was, so the title poem was written quite a while before the majority of the book. So I wrote this poem and a few others that are in the book. And then there was this huge lull of just no activity, no writing at all, really. And then as I knew that I was obviously going to, at some point, be writing, putting together a new collection, this was going to be part of it. And it was one of those strange poems that comes from some dreamlike place that I don't even know exactly where, you know, where it came from. But it was, as I started to write more of the book, because I wrote the bulk of the book really quickly in the end, I realized that a lot of it revolved around the same themes that I think that this poem really, really captured as a starting off point for before going into the rest of the poems. And it was really quite late in putting the manuscript together that I decided to title the book Ghost Poetry. And I just thought it was, considering the themes of the book, where memory is, and hauntings, psychological haunting is such a prominent aspect of all the poems, I decided that it was, I think, the perfect representation of what the poetry was, because a lot of them exist in a lot of my work in this book in particular, exist in this really dreamlike, sort of surreal but still grounded in reality. It's definitely one of the poems that I'm most proud of.
It's quite an anchor, I think, to the collection. And I feel like, you know, ghosts function in so many different ways. I mean, you know, ghost is subject, ghost is object. Poems for ghosts, poems to go, poems from a ghost, and the whole notion of maybe the shadow self as a ghost itself.
Absolutely, and especially in a poem where the speaker exists as an entity that's present but also not there. Yeah, I think it's a fascinating idea.
Yeah, and it really, I think that that's an idea that permeates the book. I mean, I feel like, so much of it has this underworld subconscious feel, almost like a descent, right from the get-go.
Yeah, definitely. It starts at a very dark point and just dives deeper, I think.
Yeah, and yet, it's not hopeless because I feel like there's no map for sure, which is what you say right in the beginning, right? No map in my flesh. It's very embodied in many ways, but also I think you set it up right from the get-go that this is an alter world. This is not necessarily the end of the living world so much as the alternative world that's a shadow of the living, like that the living is continuing somewhere. I get that sense, that there is this
Thank
hopeful
you.
emergence in the morning, if you like, that we are a night, we are in a nightmare, we are in dreams, we are in death, but it's an underworld and there is still light coexisting. I get that sense all through the book. I'm not even sure why, but it really struck me right from the beginning that, we are descending with you, but we know that there is a morning.
Yeah, I think the way that memory functions in poetry in general, it is a way for things that have passed, whether they are relationships or people or places, to still very much be alive. And I think
Yes.
that's definitely a common theme.
Yes, almost even a re reanimation of those who aren't. And with that, I'd love to get you to read I Dreamt I Saw You on a Bridge, which is 33, if that's okay.
I dreamed I saw you on a bridge. I walked to the railing of the bridge and looked down, a heart receding suddenly upon opening, an instant of light extinguished by distance. The landscape without your body lengthened. I felt your shadow as if it were cast across the wires and blanketing the concrete around me. You were here before the blade's edge could sever the cables that held my flesh from the water's surface. I turned away and saw myself running blindly, your arms forcing my body back over the bridge's railing before being swallowed by the dark water.
I almost feel I should apologize for making you read those out loud. They feel so intimate.
I think that's a place that poetry can exist in, that it's, I don't know if you find this with your work. I just think it's the strangest thing that there are things that you probably wouldn't discuss with another human being, but you'll write about very openly.
Yeah, I think, and this is goes back to that whole notion of this coexistence between the dark and the light that is so prevalent in your work. I mean, it's intense, obviously. What you just read was intense. Dark water, the ending is a swallowing. And there is a confessional feel, definitely. And we talk about that in a minute too. But there's always a reminder that this is a creative act, that the actual poem itself is a creative act and almost a way of reclaiming that self. Did you feel that?
It's well, yeah, definitely. I almost feel like it's reshaping something into something beautiful. Even if it's obviously, some people might not think that things that are of explore some of the things that these poems explore could be beautiful, but I think, yeah, as you say, it's the work of art, and the function of the poem, the writing of the poem, is a, I think, a thread throughout this book that is a lifeline. And I think poetry definitely exists in this work as a reason to endure and survive.
Yeah. And that's that intimate vulnerability is shared. Like when you're reading that work, when I'm reading it, and there is a sense that we are connecting in a way, that you're connecting with a reader in a way that actually takes what might be, something that is intensely dark, and it kind of it's a shared space, then it's a new space, it's a creative space.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're gonna probably gonna ask if we're gonna talk about this shortly, but I think when I think of the poems that have meant the most to me and that moved me the most and have helped me the most, they're often poems like this that are, Plath, you mentioned confessional, poetry that explores, darker, taboo topics. I think is important, and I think there is a shared understanding and a benefit for, giving voice to something that's unspeakable in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely. And as a fellow Plath fan, I will say that I think that it's so easy to just say, okay, well, it's a confessional poem. It is autobiography, and miss that there is so much artifice, careful artifice, in the construction of this work, that even the intimate vulnerability, it's not raw, it's designed. So it is, again, it's this creative act, this re reclamation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something that, people use the term confessional as sort of a dirty word to disparage the work. It's been this way ever since the term was coined. People will say, like you say, people will think autobiographical, and of course there is a largely autobiographical element, but it's not. Yes, it's it they're very carefully crafted poems. Every word is chosen very deliberately. It's not a diary entry. So I think, because I know obviously you said, you're a Plath fan, and from your own work, you there's nothing there's it's important and very necessary to explore these kind of things. But yeah, I think people see dark and vulnerable work and they just think, oh, it's just confessional poetry. It's not, it mustn't have been, deliberately written with craft or something like that.
Yeah, I think also people just, there's a kind of natural tendency to want to see autobiography in everything, with a story,
True.
as if there were a, kind of line between art and, there's the art and then there's what really happened, as if those two things were actually separate, and then what really happened is in some way kind of the truth, which I don't know that that's the case. Truth is a very, and memory and art are, these are fuzzy things.
Oh, absolutely. And if you think about it, when you write a poem, the process of conceiving, writing, and then eventually publishing a poem, that is a very long process. So it's not this, it might come across as with this urgency when you're reading it, if it's done right, but it's not, it's very much a construction and a reconstruction of what you're trying to address in the work. So I don't think any poetry can be purely autobiographical, but of course everyone's going to read into a poem and think that it's about the writer.
Yeah, that's just human tendency. I don't know. One of the other things I love, though, in this collection, and one of the things I think that also is part of the artifice, is the way you blur the lines between subject and object. And I think that happens throughout the book. There is this kind of surreal sense of that brings the reader in, almost as if they were experiencing, they were the subject. So maybe if I could get you to read a poem that does that really, really powerfully. Brand, which is 48.
Brand. Most of the time, the paddock opens around you when you reach its center. The grasses and concealed pathways at your feet, barely contained by the wires. The dying trees and eroded dams, and the veins of the city still years away. Interminable silence from every side before great cracks appear in the clouds of your head, widening as a dark rain enters the morning. Then the slow run of startled cows gathered on the hillside in the distance on the next property you must never cross. Back at the farmland's mouth, progressing down the driveway as you follow the noise, watching the horses being ushered into the stockyards beneath the teeming rain and led into the corral where he holds the smoking steel poker. That blackened doorway suddenly closing with the sound of flame bitten by the water's surface. You will remember and hear it again years later. The way the horse had fallen and cried out, its mouth almost human.
So much goes on in this poem. And I think there's, again, so much careful construction here that plays with the notion of memory and time and, humans and animals, dreams and realities. There's a lot of things happening here. Talk to me a little bit about this poem.
It's because obviously I grew up on a farm. My father was a horse trainer, so growing up, you would these are the a lot of the environments that these poems are set in are very much drawn from my childhood, and a lot of the work, as you say, it exists in this blurring the line between, dream and waking, and memory, and a poem like this, it shifts time period, throughout. So it's, I think it's one of those, the way that I think of it, to sort of put it as simply as I think I can would be, it reads like having a dream about something that has actually happened. So it's altered and it's surreal and strange, but it is very much recalling something.
Yes, and that's a reminder in the end, even though it's very immediate in the beginning. So there's a real turn that happens.
And also the way that you find an understanding of things with time that you perhaps wouldn't have had as a child. And just the way that memory, to use the term haunting, it just, if you're someone who clings to things and really struggles with the past and memory as I do, it's, when you're haunted by things that you've experienced, it's when you're reframing them in a poem, I think they do cross over into this dreamlike kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, there's also a rhythm to it. You talk about the country and the paddocks, and I think the word that applied to you, and I haven't heard it applied to any other poet, is Gothic country. It's
Yeah.
like Bob Dylan meets Rumbo.
It's probably the coolest thing that's ever been said about me.
Yes, with a touch of satiric on. Let me add
Oh
that
yeah.
one.
Oh, for sure.
It's a rhythm and it's an atmosphere, right? And I think that comes through in the structuring and the rhythms and the re repetitions and the alliterations that occur throughout the work.
Yeah, it's sort of a build. There is, yeah, the syntax is always, I think, it's sort of a driving forward, to get to the point where the poem completely startles you. I think that's not, I'm a big believer in the importance of last lines. I think
Yes. Well, that's a doozy, right? It's mouth almost human.
it's a start, yeah, it's a very piercing image. But and I think a lot of the poems are like that, especially when I write about horses.
Yes.
I sort of in the beautiful review that you wrote, and there's the mixing of the human and the animal, and attributing various qualities from to each other, which I think is a very, I mean, if you look at something like, Peter Schaefer's Equus, that's just a it's a truly haunting thing to imagine.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And of course, this is a book of horses. They're everywhere, and they're both literal. Very, very, as I said in the review, there's a very visceral sense of the horse, its body, its power, its servitude versus the power. So that is a real interesting tension that goes on. And also they are in many ways metaphors of many things, different things, but all throughout the book, right from the cover right to the last line, there are horses.
I can't see myself ever not writing about them. But what you're saying about the horse, I think the horse is such a fascinating thing to write about, because they embody absolute power and also complete vulnerability, which is essentially the same as a human. And yeah, I like when you say that it's a book of horses, because it definitely, yeah, it's a very obviously it's very important to me personally. I love horses.
Yes.
To
So
put
with
it
that,
simply.
can I ask you to read Horse of God, which is 78?
Horse of God. I am waiting again while the night comes, circling and directionless, my breath riderless, carrying the knife-wielding hand closer towards the wrist and faltering before the stilled mouth of dark blood, untouched by the trees, unmolested by the violent grasses. I would like to be like the sun, faceless and distant again, burning unbridled inside the sky's ceiling and braying silently. A long night in a city bar traced across the paddock's edge and forever returning to try again. Night comes. Night comes fast, drowning the rider first and then the nag. You say your brother has killed himself and I am the murderer. I am a drunk and a drug addict. Without a rider, the horse spooks as gunfire sounds inside your skull and claims you. Drowned words fading with the hooves pounding against a stark dawn. A horse without dreams of childhood trembling in the cold air until being taken and forced into a barren field. A horse running wildly into nothingness. I thought my eyes opening and closing in the humid night were a passage to forgiveness. I thought I was somebody else.
So yes, again, a lot of dualities happening in this poem, a lot of tensions between opposing themes, that what you talked about with this kind of power and helplessness, freedom and servitude. Forgiveness and its opposite, so many things going on.
Yeah, that's a particularly intense one, I think.
And again, sorry, I
There,
picked all the intense ones to make you read.
no, that's absolutely fine. I was just going to say before as well, you're talking about we're talking about autobiography. I read a lot about Plath, and you take a poem like Daddy, and people read that as being, completely autobiographical, and then you realize that there are so many things going on in the poem that Plath is doing, and it's not necessarily, obviously there are countless references to her life, but it's not purely autobiographical in any sense. And I think,
No.
yeah, it's even and even when she spoke about it, she didn't refer to it in she referred to it in the third person, when she did the recording for the BBC. And I think this kind of poem is one that's Horse of God. It's very much like everything. It is definitely confessional, but it's so based in a dreamlike, surreal world, where humans are treated as horses are, that it couldn't be purely autobiographical, I don't think.
And there's so many beautiful images as well, and metaphors, and again, the tensions between different aspects of the language itself, even the language itself, so not necessarily what it resolves to, in terms of specific semantic meaning, but the way in which the rhythm of a horse runs through it, or this galloping, this sense of musicality in the work itself is, I think, as much part of the meaning as the semantics of it.
Yes, definitely. And the and human violence, combined with the rhythm of the horse, it's as if the horse is driving, the construction of the poem, I think.
Yeah. And so we don't have much time left, and I want to squeeze in one more if I can, because I just love hearing you read. So could you just maybe finish with another horse poem? They're all horse poems, really, but Straw Horses, which is 87. It's not the last poem in the book. But again, I think this there's a lot of anaphora in this one, a lot of repetition of the first line, and a beautiful musicality. So I'd love to hear you read this one to finish us off.
Thank you. Straw horses. And again the rigid dawn, again the morning, at the point of waking, where the impenetrable hours revolve and rebuild you, dressed in old skin. These bodies of strangers disappearing into separate fields, like straw horses in a thunderstorm. The paddock will end, no matter how slowly we walk. No matter how my mouth is wounded each time I kiss you. No matter the ache of our soaking bodies and heaving throats, when I say love will drown you to the shivering bones, to the town within your flesh I enter, the backyards where water pools in the broken earth's basin. I can call you and use your name as refuge, your arms as a farmhouse, becoming a bonfire at the edge of knowing. Where I could invent you again and relearn the violence of your mouth, like the pounding of horses' hooves trampling us because they do not know we are lying there in the paddock. Take my spine as a rein, make my blood a trail for you to ride. Look back and forget the pulse of the fence lines closing in, our skin burning when we touch the dark rain. When I watch desire drive your sky. Body free, when you can forgive the unchanging dawn, forgive the burning rain, forgive the horses colliding with your childlike flesh, puncturing your drowning lungs. Forgive me.
Yes, so much beautiful musicality in that one as well. And, again, the blurring of the animal and the human and the subject and the object, who's forgiving who. It is just so, beautifully, beautifully crafted.
Thank you. I think it's another one of those poems. I wrote it at the same time as Ghost Poetry, the
Ah,
poem.
yes. It does feel like an anchor.
I think it's something that's very hard to describe, I think, and that's because it does exist in such a dreamlike, surreal place. But I really love the way that you noticed the crafting of the poems, especially because like we were saying before, I think sometimes there's a tendency to sort of disregard the craft when the subject is so intense.
Oh no, the crafting is clear. So I feel like we could just go on for another hour or two, work through each one. But unfortunately, we're out of time. So I'm going to end it there. But I do want to say again, Robbie, congratulations on Ghost Poetry. I will put links to Upswell's page for it up on the show notes and also your website. But that's all for now. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Maggie. It's been a pleasure.